don't just consider the local market, consider global, the global market. You have people all over the world open to you to teach to through lessons online. And some of them in very wealthy countries and areas that have a lot higher budgets and a lot higher idea of what music lessons are worth. And thirdly, there are a lot of other ways to supplement your income besides teaching. You could do, you know, group lessons and workshops and retreats and all sorts of different things.
You're watching Tim Topham TV, the piano teaching podcast, and this is episode number 41. G'day everyone and welcome to today's show, which is the first in business month on the blog. And this is a really, really important month, in my opinion, in which I help you, hopefully, through the interviews with these fantastic people we've got lined up, to consider other sources of income, other ways to make money as a teacher, ways to streamline what you already do, and just everything to do with business. So my guest today, really, really special guest, he is the CEO of Music Teachers Helper, and that's online scheduling and software technology for music teachers that I've recommended before. It's a fantastic application, and I could talk about that, but today isn't actually about Music Teachers Helper. It's about the business side of things and what we can learn from someone like Brandon Pierce, who's my guest today. Now, before I go any further, I did want to thank today's sponsor, which is the Piano Teachers Inner Circle. And most of you will go, oh yeah, that's your your community. And it is. So I am sponsoring my own podcast, but I wanted to do that today just to let you know of just how cool this community has become and how big it's become. The number of people in there is growing. And look, this is the place to be. If you are truly passionate about piano teaching and you want to really make a difference in your students' lives and you're willing to help other teachers make a difference in their students' lives, the kind of people that are in the inner circle at the moment are those who are really passionate, they're dedicated, they're committed to being the best they can be, and they have a real strong drive to share with other people. And that's what the community is all about. So not only do you get access to all my resources and videos, you know, teaching, watching me teach, using apps, all that kind of stuff, that's really only a small part of it. I mean, there's a lot in there, but, you know, resources are great. The thing that you will get by joining my inner circle is the community. So we've got a bustling community forum full of ideas and questions and great topics of conversation. And we also have our monthly mastermind online. So that's a chance to actually hang out with me, have a chat and the other members and share ideas, ask questions, all that kind of stuff. Look, guys, I don't want to tell you anymore. I want you to go to timtopham.com/community if you haven't been there recently and had a look at the video and all the benefits, and make sure you sign up while you can. This episode is also sponsored by the Forte School of Music. And many of you will know the founder and one of the directors of Forte from previous podcasts and a number of blogs on timtopham.com, and that's Paul Myatt. So Forte School of Music has been a huge success story in Australia with around 4,000 students and schools in all major capital cities. They are currently looking for entrepreneurial music teachers who are interested in building a successful business in Australia or other countries with the opportunity to be the master franchisor in their territory. Forte schools can build to the size you're able to manage. Some schools are small with just a couple of hundred students, while others have nearly 1,000 students and $1 million turnover. The key to success after being in business for 22 years is quality, the courses and systems, but most importantly, the teachers who offer the pedagogically sound curriculum. To find out more about Forte, head to fortemusic.com.au/business. Okay, so my guest today, Brandon, he has been the CEO of Music Teachers Helper since it started. He actually founded it. And really, in about 5 or 8 years, he went from being a US piano teacher, a studio teacher just like most of us, from that to living a very comfortable life, traveling the world all the year round with his family and working about 6 to 8 hours a week. How good would that be? Remotely on his business and making enough money to live comfortably wherever he is in the world. It's a really inspiring story, and I know you're going to get a lot out of it. He's a fascinating person, and I hope it really is a way that you can get inspired by the possibilities that can lie out there for you in the world using technology. Let's get straight into it. Here is Brandon Pierce from Music Teachers Helper. Well, Brandon, welcome to the show. Thanks very much for joining me today.
Thanks, Tim. Happy to be here.
All right. So this is going to be, this podcast is part of my business month at timtopham.com. So it's about helping teachers sort of think more laterally, I guess, about how they can make more income from their piano teaching or whether they can do some other projects on the side or completely diversify their income. So the reason I wanted to get you on the show is you have an incredible story, which I think can be really inspiring for teachers. And we'll talk about how you've kind of moved from being a teacher into being an entrepreneur. That's kind of what you've achieved. But I guess I don't want to turn people off right from the beginning, people that, you know, are really happy teaching their students. So I wonder if you can give us your own kind of opinion about how entrepreneurial stories and inspirational kind of stories like what we're going to be talking about can help teachers, even if they're kind of comfortable in their current situation.
Sure. Well, I think first it's important for teachers to remember that, you know, as long as they're independent teachers and not working for a school or something, that they are entrepreneurs already. And when you see your studio, see your career from that vantage point, it kind of opens the door for other creative ways to earn income and to connect with your students. So that's the first thing that I would say. And then, you know, the second is, you know, I mean, I don't know what teachers will get out of the podcast, but it'll probably be different for everybody in each situation. So I think, but I think stories like this can help teachers to, it gives an opportunity to kind of look into yourself at what, you know, what you do enjoy. If you love teaching and that's what you want to do, then, you know, that's what you should do. But if, you know, you feel some kind of a longing to create a new kind of product around music teaching or even change your career entirely, I think it's important to stay open to that as well.
Yeah, it's great. I think I've really been pushing this kind of idea for piano teachers, or music teachers in general, to consider themselves, as you say, as business owners. They are their own CEOs of their enterprises. And it's very easy to kind of downplay that, you know, oh no, I'm just kind of, you know, running, I'm just doing a little studio in my back room or whatever.
Sure.
It is. It's almost hard, I think, to make that switch, but I'm really pushing teachers. And I think the more books I read about it, that are being put out at the moment for teachers, the more I'm reading, this is the way that you have to think about things in order to I guess create a living that is sustainable, which is ultimately
definitely
right. So look, let's get into your story a little bit, because it's fascinating. Can you tell us that moment when your journey to where you currently are actually began? What was that catalyst, and what is it, what is it kind of, where has it taken you? In the short version, because I know it's obviously, we could talk about this for quite some time. But
all right. Sure. Well, I was 22 or 23. It was early 2002 or 3, I think it was. I was teaching music lessons, piano lessons. I had 10 students and going to school to study computer programming. I had a wife and a little baby. I was working full-time as an internet tech support rep, making $10 an hour, just trying to, you know, make ends meet and keep up with the busyness of life.
That is busy.
yeah, that's a lot going on. And, you know, it's kind of a side project. Well, my students would come to my lessons and ask, you know, how much do I owe you? And I would find it would just kind of annoy me a little bit to have to take the time and to calculate up, all right, how many lessons there were, when were the payments, and every, you know, during lesson time, it didn't seem like the best time for that. There's got to be a more efficient way to do this. And so I just wrote a little program for me to help me keep track of that information. I would input every lesson that the students had and every payment they made, and then I could just check to see that the software would calculate how much the student owed at any given time.
And you were able to do this because you were already a software programmer, you had coding skills, is that right?
That's right. I mean, I started programming when I was 12, so I you know, I knew a little bit, but I was also going to college to lean toward that as a profession, but also teaching on the side.
And for any tech geeks out there, what programming language were you using right at the beginning?
I was using PHP.
Okay, cool. So it was a web-based
It was all software. Web-based, yep.
Right from the start. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great.
Yes.
All right. Back to you.
Yeah, and so the other catalyst, though, to turn it into a business was that, because I had no intention of of making money with this. This is just a kind of a side project for me. But two things happened that really shifted it for me. One was my father-in-law, who was in the IT industry, lost his job. He hadn't done anything wrong, but I started to realize that there really is no such thing as job security when you work for somebody else. And I realized that I wanted more than that for my family. I wanted more security. And then second is that a friend suggested, well, why don't you turn this software project you've created into a business? And I realized that there were other teachers out there who were interested in what I was doing. And it was really helpful for me. It was saving me a lot of time and headache. And I'd also by that point made it possible for students to log in from home to check their schedules, mm-hmm. to make payments online. And it was just really convenient. And I was sending notes to the parents about how the lessons went. It was all automatic. So I thought, yeah, teachers could probably benefit from this. I mean, I know I'm loving it. And so surely there's someone else out there who'd be interested too. So I decided to make it available for other teachers.
How did you confirm the need that, I mean, you could guess, as most people who would start a new product or sort of software would go, oh, I reckon other people would use this, but that's probably not enough to build a business on. How did you actually go about confirming with people, yes, this is a thing we need, and yes, we will pay for it?
You know, I didn't actually.
All right.
It was just, first of all, I didn't, unlike a lot of businesses where, you know, you have a huge expense to get started and a huge commitment. For me, it was just, I was the programmer. I was the only person doing it. I didn't have investors. I didn't, you know, make it a big deal. So if no one really wanted it, all I would be out is time. So there wasn't a huge risk for me. Mm. And also I was just confident that teachers would, because I did. And the people I talked to, who were my music teacher colleagues, all seemed confident that it would be useful.
Okay. So when did you make the step to actually sell? I assume you sold it to other people, or did you first kind of give it away to people to say, hey, what do you think about this?
I did, yeah. And we had a free account. Well, we still do have a free plan as well. But, I mean, from the beginning, I was looking very actively for feedback on, you know, what can I do to make this better, and how can I, you know, improve it to really serve teachers' needs more. So, yeah, that was always part of it.
So you shared it with people, got their feedback, and then obviously realized, well, hey, this is actually pretty serious. This is something that people want. Maybe I could make a business out of it. How did you know when it was that kind of point? Because there must come a point where you're doing these three jobs and you're a parent, and then it must kind of tip over at some point, and you go, all right, I'm gonna go for this. How did that work?
Maybe I'm overly optimistic, but when my first customer paid me, that was probably the time, like, this is it. Someone's willing to pay for it. It must be a great idea. So, you know, I wanted to put more effort into it at that point. It became really exciting for me, a real passion project. Unfortunately, I was too busy to do a whole lot with it. So, I mean, I was going to school and working full time and all of that. So every waking moment for the next 4 or 5 years was spent on building Music Teacher's Helper. I'd get up early. I'd spend all my lunch breaks on it. I'd stay up late at night. It was consuming everything, but it was fun.
Okay. So probably from, you know, starting to make the website yourself or the product mm-hmm. for yourself to actually kind of putting it out there as a paid product to the general public, how many years would that have taken?
From initial conception to launching it as a business, I think about 2 years. But again, that's because it's very part-time. I was just playing around for most of it. And I could have launched it much quicker, of course, if that was my initial intent.
Do you think a teacher out there who has a good job, a good idea for another piece of software could have the same kind of result without being a programmer and paying someone to do it? Or is that a very different kind of proposition?
I mean, it depends on the situation and the product and everything. I mean, there are a lot of people who create software businesses who aren't programmers, of course. I also think programming is a skill that most people can learn pretty easily. If you go to a site like codeacademy.com, you can learn for free very quickly.
Is that genuinely quickly or Like, because I mean, I look at the code on my website and go, oh my goodness, I've got little ideas, but far out.
I guess it depends on how much you enjoy it.
Yeah.
But and how much time you have to put into it. But I'd say over the course of a few months, you can get a pretty good handle on basic programming.
Okay.
But it's also possible to hire out programmers for reasonable amounts. So, you know, especially if you hire somebody in Eastern Europe or the Philippines or something like that, where the costs are a lot lower, it's easier to find help that way.
Mm. I mean, I just think it's an exciting thing being, you know, creative, developing a venture, particularly when I guess you've developed it for yourself initially. And I know there's a lot of products and websites that start that way. I'm solving a problem for myself, and oh, by the way, I think a whole lot of other people might like this too. I think it's a really interesting concept for other teachers to not necessarily consider, you know, completely changing their life and quitting their job or all this kind of stuff, but just to think, you know, maybe it's not a website for them to start, but maybe it's you know, starting to sell some of their worksheets online on Teachers Pay Teachers or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah.
What other skills did you need apart from coding over the last 5 years or so of the growth of the business? What other skills have you required to develop the business?
Yeah, well, I mean, when I started, I knew nothing about business, knew nothing about marketing or sales, or I did know customer support pretty well because of my experience in tech support. But yeah, I mean, I've had to learn a lot of that. I mean, I did all the graphics design, did all the marketing, all of those typical business skills I had to learn, as well as management now that we have over 20 employees in the business. So learning to work as a team and to, you know, set vision and to delegate and to, all those things have been important skills to learn.
Yeah,
that I never thought I would be picking up like this.
How did you go about promoting Music Teachers Helper in the early days?
It was a lot of trial and error. I designed really ugly flyers. Looking back, I think they're ugly. That I put up in music stores or different places. We did go to some music teacher. I went to some music teacher conferences. Locally and nationally, which were helpful to set up a booth and talk to teachers that way. A little bit of online advertising, magazines, which were not very successful, probably because it's an online product. But I think by far the biggest source of new teachers has always been word of mouth referrals. Mm. So teachers would use it, like it, share it with their friends who would use it and like it and share it.
Mm.
And that's to this day how we still get most of our customers.
Yep. And what did you, when you first started, what did it cost for teachers to use?
I think it was $7.95 a month for 10 students.
Okay.
So now we are at $14 a month for 20 students. We also had a free plan up to 3 students. Now we're up to 5. And the maximum plan now is $49 a month for unlimited students, and there's several tiers in between.
Yep.
I mean, of course, the product was a lot different back then as well. It was really basic. It just did, you know, basic scheduling and billing. Now we have automatic invoicing and online payments and practice log and a repertoire tracker and a lending library and a mileage tracker and income and expense reports, everything you need to, you know, to manage your studio.
And I love that it keeps iterating too. I keep getting, you know, emails about a new feature that's been added. And I think that's great. You know, you're not charging us extra for it. It's just like, you know, here's part of the deal. We've upgraded the software. Here's another thing, cool thing that you can use. I think that's a great way to run it too.
Thank you. Yeah. This year is going to be huge with new features. We've been making a major shift.
Can you give us an inside scoop?
A little bit, sure. I mean, this week we just launched a new design, which is going to be the foundation for all of the new work that we're putting on this year that we've been really working for the past year and a half at behind the scenes. But yeah, this new design now is, because the software is 11 years old, we've done several redesigns and updates over the years, but it's been a few years since the last one. So now we're completely responsive and it works great on all devices, tablets, phones. And So the next step is to gradually replace pretty much every part of the program with newly freshly designed aspects that take into account really what teachers are trying to do with the software and also in their studios in general. So I sent out a survey a couple of years ago now, I think, maybe not that long, really trying to get an idea for what teachers, you know, what teachers' needs were. I mean, we had been in business for almost 10 years at that point, and I was feeling like the software was great and it was serving a lot of people, but I knew there was more that we could do and to make it better. And so I was asking questions like, you know, what are we doing well? What are we not doing well? What are the major challenges you have in teaching, in your teaching studio in general, outside of even the software and what we're doing? And what can we help with? And I was really touched by the responses that came back. People were really vulnerable and shared some really great insights that helped us in shaping the product for this year. So,
can you give us an example of one of those insights, or one of the things that's led to change?
Sure. Invoicing, for example, we're doing it very simply now, and it will continue to be simple. But I guess that's a good example of this. Because every single part of the software is changing.
Right.
But invoicing is going to be more, how can I say it? Simple, more simple, but also more powerful. So,
easier to use, easier to use, but more functionality somehow. Is that that's kind of the thing?
Yeah, and more just, there are ways that it works now in which, it's harder to tell what is going in the invoice. So this new system will allow teachers to know exactly what is going to be showing on every single invoice at any time, and exactly when they're going out. Everything will be able to be previewed and easier to pull in specific transactions, easier to handle taxes in different countries, all sorts of different things. Everything that the teachers have requested over the past 10 years that they wanted in the invoicing system, we're putting it in now.
So you're finally getting, you know, you as you iterate and improve, you're adding all these features that you know teachers want because you've surveyed them.
Exactly.
It's really good. I want to come back to the business in a second, but just looking at this from an outside perspective almost, you should probably tell everyone a little bit about actually how you spend your life these days, because you're obviously very connected to the business, but people might not know that you're actually not sitting in an office every day as well. So tell us a little bit about your current lifestyle, because I think it's fascinating.
Sure. Let me back up just a little bit, because I mean, for the first 5 or 6 years of building the business, I was working 70 to 80 hour weeks building it. It wasn't until 2008 or 9 where I was making enough to where I felt comfortable to quit my job and then do Music Teacher's Helper full time.
And how many years after that was, after you started, was that? That you went,
that was about
quit my job.
4 or 5 years.
Okay.
So it took a long time to get to that point, again, because it was all with the meager hours I could scrape together and and with my very limited experience. I think at that point I was still only making about $1,500 a month with Music Teacher's Helper. Mm-hmm. So it took a long time to take off. But after that point, I was able to put much more effort into it and started earning enough that I could hire help, and it really started taking off at that point. So now, 12 years after the business started, I am traveling with my family around the world, working from wherever I happen to be. All our employees also, we don't have a central office, we're an online company, so all of my employees work from wherever they're at as well. Most of our, all of our management and most of our support is in the States. We have some programmers in the Philippines and Eastern Europe, but we're pretty global. I sometimes work on the couch, sometimes on the bed, sometimes in an office if I have one.
Don't tell me sometimes in a hammock on the beach. That'll be the next one.
You know, that doesn't really work so well with all the sand and sun.
It looks good in photos, doesn't it?
That's right. It looks good in photos.
How do your staff all communicate when they're in different time zones in different parts of the world? I imagine communication could be quite difficult. Have you got tools for that?
Yeah, mostly we use email. I mean, that's always been my go-to, but we also started using a program called Bitrix24.com, which is kind of a social intranet where we can all chat together as a team and communicate that way. Mm. Time zone-wise, yeah, sometimes people stay up later or earlier, and we just work it out, but... Yeah,
it works. Yeah,
it works. Yeah,
and
my managers with their teams often have, you know, Skype chats and group meetings and stuff like that online
yeah.
as well.
So yes, yeah, so you obviously don't have to have all 20 people together at once online.
No, and we typically don't. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Now you've got three kids, don't you? Three young mm-hmm. children. Yep. So I'm really interested. I mean, it sounds like the ultimate lifestyle: traveling the world, exploring. But when you've got kids with you. This becomes a little bit more complex. So I'm really interested in how you go about educating your children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, one of the reasons we started traveling is because of the kids, and we wanted to give them an experience that was different from the kind of bubble that we feel we grew up in, and wanted to expand, learn new languages, experience other cultures. And so we don't really follow a set curriculum in how we educate our kids.
So you're homeschool, in inverted commas. You teach them yourself?
Actually, not even that. No. we more follow kind of an unschooling approach where we support the kids in pursuing the things that they're interested in. So we don't teach them necessarily. I mean, we do. We learn together, and we provide tools and resources for them to go down the avenues that they want. So, for example, my oldest is 12, and she is very passionate about music, which kind of makes sense.
Yep.
So she's taking singing and songwriting lessons from a professional songwriter in LA. And
online, of course.
Online, yep, through Skype. Yep. And she's released her first two singles this week,
which
is exciting. Yeah, and she's also taking dance lessons online, Irish dance, and we also take advantage of local classes wherever we're at. So my middle daughter is 10, and she's in a gymnastics class here in Nelson, New Zealand, where we're at the moment, and we'll be here for the next 3 months.
Okay. So things like that. For a few months at a time, do you? Tend to?
We do, yeah. It's a lot less expensive that way, first of all, and then it allows us to integrate more into the community and get into routines and get some creative work done. We would get burned out really quick if we're just constantly sightseeing or that type of travel that most people do in the 2 week vacation.
How do you keep traveling?
So we're more living parts of the world.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have any concerns about when your kids? I mean, I assume you'll base yourself somewhere eventually. Or maybe not. If your kids want to go to university, for example, how are they going to have the qualifications or pass the exams that they need to do that if they want to?
Yeah, I'm not too worried about that because mainly what we're teaching our kids, if we're teaching them anything, is how to learn. And I mean, my oldest is so proactive. She knows more than I do about a whole lot of things. Through the internet, and they're also, I forgot to mention, they use websites like Khan Academy, which has tons of videos for math and science.
Khanacademy.com, right?
That's right. Lots of websites like that, but fantastic resources for learning just about anything. And I think, I mean, the world is really a lot different than it was when I was going to school. I mean, you can learn anything now pretty much for free on the internet. So there isn't really as much value. I mean, there is still, and if you have a really good teacher who can inspire you and can consolidate important information that you want to learn. But I feel like so much of what I learned in school was kind of busy work and stuff that I wasn't very interested in at all, and just memorized for a test and then forgot, and kind of a waste of time in a lot of ways, even up through college. You know, internationally, there are a lot of universities that make it easy to enter and that are a lot more affordable than the States. So wherever they decide to go whatever they decide to do, I'm supportive of, as well as an entrepreneurial lifestyle. Even if they decide they don't want to go to college, I'm okay with that too, because I realized that it wasn't essential for me in my business during this type of living and lifestyle. So, but it depends on what they want to go into. Sometimes a degree is necessary. So,
yeah, it's a very progressive view of bringing up your children, I think.
Isn't it? Yeah.
I think it's great, but you must get a fair few people going, you're mad, or you're, you know, this is so wrong, your children are missing out or whatever. How do you cope with people that give you those kind of reactions? Or, you know, you're just confident in your own children and how you run things, it's okay.
You know, I mean, I do have doubts at times, and we're open to exploring other avenues. We've put our kids in school for a month or two here and there in different places, and they've decided it's not really for them, but maybe later they'll change as they get older as well. So it just depends. We're totally open to other ways. And I think what works for one family doesn't always work for another. So, you know, I'm not saying that this is the only way everyone should do things. But it definitely works for us.
I'm fascinated by it because there's a lot of educational research out there that says exactly what you've done, that said, in that a lot of schoolwork is busy work. And a lot of it really isn't relevant to the 21st century job market. And, you know, kids would be far more successful if they just learned some coding, for example, because everything's going to be coded. If they, you know, learned some skills about problem solving, creativity and how to learn, it would be just as effective. I've read plenty of articles that say that. So I think I give you kudos for trying it out with your own children. It's almost a case study or a book in itself, I think, potentially down the track.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. We've been to several unschooling conferences where we've seen a lot of people who have been raised like this up through adulthood, and they're doing great. The thing that I also want for my kids is not for them to just get stuck into a job that they don't like and feeling like they're in a rut, but to really be doing something where they love it and feel like they're making a valuable contribution to the world. And having the flexibility to adapt and to listen to themselves and what they want, and not just do what they're told to do because they think they're supposed to do it, which is how the school system is kind of set up.
All right, I just want to go back to the business. A few more questions about that. One in particular is in regard to staff. You say they're all over the world, which is kind of the modern way things are happening. And in actual fact, I've got help in different countries for my blog and different aspects of that, and my uploading podcasts like this and things. I wonder for teachers who might be listening, you know, you don't have to have a business to hire a little bit of help from overseas, potentially. So what are some things that teachers could potentially use what we call a virtual assistant for in another country, do you think? Do you think that's something that teachers could do?
Definitely. And it doesn't even have to be in another country. It could be the same. I have a virtual assistant in the States at the moment who's extremely helpful for me in work. And I guess I need to think, as you know, as a music teacher, what would be useful. But it's funny, I could almost put a plug in for my business here, because we've designed it in a way to you know, be kind of an assistant to music teachers without having to, you know, pay for an actual person. But yes, but there are still things I think beyond that that you could probably use help with. Or even just taking care of some of the data entry into the software, or you know, making calls to students for different aspects of things, or collecting payments if there are, you know, issues with that.
So I'm thinking about my own timetabling, for example. I teach at a school, and we have a confusing system of rotating timetables over two periods and things like that. And I've talked to some of your guys about it, and it's not quite something that music teacher can do. It's because it's very complex, and there's lots of ifs and buts, and at the moment I can't think of a way to automate it particularly well. But there's aspects of the data entry that could easily be done by someone in another country, for example. So, you know, I guess for teachers listening, I'd say, you know, if there are mundane, repetitive things that you could easily ask someone else to do and pay them to do that, to give you more time to be creative or to explore new repertoire or something like that, then consider it, because it's not necessarily that expensive. And if you, if you often have to do this, you could set up a little video about how you do it, how you want it done, and then they can just go off and do it.
I would even say, before we move on from that is, you know, even not in your business, but in your personal life, there are a lot of things that you can automate as well that save time, whether it's some cities have websites, people who can run errands for you, or, you know, I've used a site called fancyhands.com for a lot of online research tasks and making phone calls to take care of different things. Very inexpensive. I think it was like $25 a month and you get 5 or 10 tasks or something like that. Or, you know, going to sites like Upwork.com to look for people in different countries or all over the world for pretty much anything you want to hire out. You can find it.
Yep. A new logo for your studio. If you want to get something more professional done than you could do yourself, there's so many opportunities out there. I think another site that I used when I began was Fiverr, Fiverr.com, which is a great site where most of the gigs, well, they were $5. I don't think they are anymore, but that's the idea of the site. You know, you pay $5 and you get one logo designed and things like that. So I really want to kind of just broaden all the viewers' notions of how you can use this integrated international world now of people in these other countries for whom $5 to $10 an hour is a top wage. You can not only get great work done for yourself, you can be supporting other people in other countries. I think it's great. And Upwork is where I go as well, upwork.com, to find people. So, was the hands, the fancy hands or something?
Fancyhands.com,
Great. We'll put a link to that in the show notes for sure.
Okay.
Now, I just want to get on to making money, right? I think for a lot of teachers, not just music either, just teachers generally, making money is almost a dirty word. Almost like we should be a community service. We don't want to ask for, we almost don't want to ask for payment. And so I guess my question for you is, did you ever feel this way when you're establishing and you're building, your business was starting to grow? And what would you say to teachers who might be feeling the same way?
Yeah, that is a mindset that I grew up with. And thinking that money is a dirty word, and definitely. And it's taken a long time for me to gradually overcome that. Now I see money more as a neutral unit of exchange and kind of an indicator of value. So we all spend money on the things that we value. So if you're creating something that is valuable, somebody who also values that will pay you money for it. And I think if you're creating something that's really valuable, then someone will pay you a lot of money for it. And I think there should be no guilt or shame in that exchange. It's just an indicator that what you're doing is valuable. Now, there are, of course, people who you've got to
ignore that.
There are, I do think there's something maybe detrimental in, pursuing money just for money's sake, and over, the idea of value or of contribution. But I think when your focus is on creating the value rather than just creating money, I think the money tends to flow into that. So that's how I tend to view it. I do enjoy, having enough money to sustain my family and to do the things that I love, and that, having enough of that and a little bit more also allows me to create other products and to contribute in other ways that I otherwise wouldn't be able to if I were not valuing what I did highly. And I think for music teachers that also is something to consider is, how much do you value what you're offering? Are you worth $10 an hour? And, I don't really want to promote myself because, no one's really going to want it. Or are you worth $150 an hour lesson because what you do is changing people's lives and it's really making the world a better place? And anything within that range, determine what you're worth and confidently stick to that. And then if there will be other people who can see that around you, that you are contributing that much value, and they'll be willing to do that exchange with you. That's my take.
Yeah, and I imagine teachers would agree with that, but then say, actually, I'm living in an area where there's, two people down the road charging $20 for a half-hour lesson. I think I'm worth $50 for a half hour lesson, but how do I compete? What would you say to that?
I would say, first of all, get clear on what you offer that the other teacher doesn't, and be creative about how you can expand your studio. I would also say, don't just consider the local market, consider global, the global market. You have people all over the world open to you to teach to through lessons online, and some of them in very wealthy countries and areas that have a lot higher budgets and a lot higher idea of what music lessons are worth. And thirdly, there are a lot of other ways to supplement your income besides teaching. You could do, you know, group lessons and workshops and retreats and all sorts of different things.
Yeah. It's great, Brandon. And there's some of the, you know, some of the ideas we're going to be exploring and have been exploring when this podcast goes live in the business month, because I want to sort of share some of these ideas. There's great ways that you can increase your income as a music teacher without spending more time potentially by, you know, doing events or special recitals or group teaching or whatever it is. So I think you're absolutely right on the money with that. So look, I'm also quite passionate about helping students make informed decisions about the reality of a music career. Do you think as teachers, we tend to give students the skills they need for the reality of a career in music, if that's what they're interested in? Do we kind of give them the skills that they need, or do we often not look far enough in the future for our students, do you think?
Well, I guess it depends on, you know, the goals of the student. Do they want to be a professional musician and, you know, be in a famous orchestra or band, or, you know, have a solo career or whatever? If so, then the skill set they're going to need is a lot different, I think, than what a lot of music teachers offer. I think it's hard to know what to share with that unless you've actually had that kind of experience yourself. It almost takes a professional musician in order to teach those skills. So I don't know. I would say, I mean, there are some really good books out there that also help with that for, you know, for students that are interested, and maybe teachers can use those as resources. What is it? Everything You Need to Know About the Music Industry. I can't remember what it's called. There's some really good book out there about that. I can share it with you later.
Maybe if you can remember it and just shoot me an email, I'll pop it in the notes.
Okay.
That would be sure. Great. I mean, any book recommendations, I think, are fantastic.
You know, I would also highly recommend The Savvy Music Teacher by David Cutler.
Yeah.
Fantastic book for earning income in different ways as a music teacher.
Yeah. In fact, I think I've got my copy right here. That's like it is such a good book. I'm going to be blogging about it more and more in the coming year. I mean, this actually I think is one of the best books that have come out in regard to helping music teachers make more money effectively, I guess, but you know, but doing it in a way that's really, really achievable. I think it's such a good book and well timed as well.
Yeah, it's so practical too. It really gets into the details. There's one other book that I would recommend that's not specific to the music industry, but just more about money in general, overcoming that money is bad mindset. It's called The Soul of Money, written by Lynn Twist. And it's a fantastic book. She spent time with tribes in the Amazon and CEOs of billion-dollar companies, and really did a lot of research into, money and how it operates and what it's for and how to use it in ways that really serve. Highly recommend that.
Great. All right. So look, we'll kind of start wrapping it up a little bit. I've got just a few more questions for you. If there are some teachers out there watching who are like, wow, I totally wish I could do that. Where could they start on this process? How could they kind of get an idea or begin sort of diversifying themselves potentially? Where would you actually just make your first step? What direction would you go?
Well, I guess it depends on what specifically they want to do. If it's, creating a valuable product that, is serving a need, then I would come up with ideas for you know, I look in your own life, you know, what annoys you, what in your life do you see that could be more efficient or done better, or what do you needs do you have that aren't being served, and then come up with a solution for that and then offer it to others. That would be first step there. If your goal is to travel the world long term, I don't think you necessarily need to have an online business to do that. Well, I mean, you could transition to online lessons and then work from anywhere pretty much. But I think there's also a misconception that travel has to be very expensive. We tend to think in terms of luxury two-week vacations. But I mean, if you move to Costa Rica, for example, or Bali, you know, you can and rent a place for a year. I mean, it's so much less expensive to your money goes so much farther in places like that than it does in the Western world.
And if you're traveling, you don't have a house back home to look after or worry about too. I assume you.
That's right.
You're like, no, what we have is what we've got.
Yeah, we sold our house and pretty much everything. We just travel with carry-on luggage.
It's really amazing. It's quite mind-blowing. I'm sure some people's minds will be totally blown by this episode.
You know, a lot of people, though, too, they rent out their homes while they travel. And that can help fund your travels in itself. Yeah, there's Airbnb or even a long-term rental, hiring a property management company to take care of it. They take 8-10%, and then the rest you can use to live.
And you don't have to worry about it, which is pretty cool.
You don't worry. Yeah.
Now, I'm a big fan of there's a book by a guy called Tim Ferriss, which we'll put a link to on the show notes, called The 4-Hour Workweek. And I was so impressed to see that you were listed. You were listed as a case study on his blog. And for those of you who don't know Tim Ferriss, he's internationally renowned for this book. It's an Amazon and New York Times, I think, bestseller. How did you get to be on that blog? How did that happen?
Yeah, there's actually two places that he referenced me on the blog. The first was a case study about Music Teacher's Helper, where I think he had asked for example case studies or something, and I submitted mine just to see what would happen, and that got chosen. But then later, I got contacted by his assistant, who saw a post on my blog that I'd written entitled How I Spend My Time Now, and I had tracked every second of every day for an entire week and categorized everything that I did.
I think just try to help, actually.
Yeah, I wanted to see if, you know, how I was spending my time was really matching my values and just if it was efficient. And it turned out that week I had worked on income producing activities about 7 hours. And I think he liked that idea and so wanted to showcase that on the blog. So he guest posted that blog post on his blog.
Got it. Yep. Did that surprise you when you worked out that it was about 7 or 8 hours worth of work in 1 week?
No, that's actually pretty typical for me now. I mean, as a CEO, my job is to set the vision for the company and to, you know, determine how we're going to go and make sure things are really working well. But I mean, I have a great team, management, and staff to carry that out. So I don't need to put a whole lot of effort into it anymore. I mean, it's a lot of effort, but it's not a lot of time.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it sounds fantastic. All right, so let's look back. What was probably the hardest time in this process for you? The one that caused the most kind of sleepless nights?
Man, I mean, it was really hard in the beginning and time-consuming, but it was also really fun and challenging. So I don't know that I would consider that such a hard time. I think probably it was after I had already made it. You know, you could say I went to, I'd sold my house, I quit my job, we were making enough money, I was traveling the world, working just a few hours a week on the business, but I was kind of burned out on it. I had put in so much time and so much focus and so much energy into it over so many years that I was just kind of like, okay. I'm done for a while. And I almost considered selling it. I did consider it. I didn't look into it very heavily. So there was a period of a good year or two where I didn't really give, I just kind of like, we'll let it keep growing. And my team was doing a great job with it and all, but I wasn't putting a lot of focus or energy into it. And it was it just wasn't exciting me, and it felt more heavy than not, all the responsibility. But then over time, I just realized that, you know what? What I've got here isn't, I mean, I could be doing so much more to serve teachers. And so I'm creating so much more value out of this. And that's when I sent out the survey. And then from there, things started spiraling, and I got more excited about it again. Yeah. So that was a hard period.
Yeah. And it just sounds like pure burnout, really.
It was. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you got it back, got your mojo back.
Thank you, me too.
can you give us just one or two business mistakes that you made that we could spare other teachers who, if they're interested in a money-making venture like this, who we could help them avoid?
You know, I tend to see mistakes as learning experiences. So I would encourage all the teachers out there to make as many mistakes as you possibly can.
Well said. Well said.
and then go from there. Yeah. Yeah. Looking back, it's hard to really identify major mistakes because they all turned into learning experiences, and there weren't really any major ones. I mean, I sent emails when I, you know, to the wrong people, or I hired people that didn't turn out to work out so well, or expend money on things that ended up being a waste, stuff like that. But
you learn from it anyway.
I learned from them. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one else can make your mistakes for you, right? And you got to do it yourself.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. So Brandon, what's next for you? What's the next big project?
Yeah. Besides continuing to expand Music Teachers Helper, and Studio Helper, which is, a program that I wrote to help music teachers. We had a lot of music teachers who were growing their studios and adding additional teachers to help with the student load and kind of doing a multi-teacher studio route. So we created another piece of software to help them manage their studios, and also made it more general so it works with dance and yoga and art and other things. So expanding these two is major right now, but also I'm working on a family travel resource guide, just kind of sharing all of the knowledge and tips we've learned over the past five, 6 years of traveling the world in different places, how to do it affordably, and you know, how to find accommodations and go to, you know, what places are going to work best for new travelers.
How to do it with a family, I would imagine.
How to do it with a family, yeah, luggage, all the questions that everyone always asks of how can you do this? Yeah. We're answering in that guide. So,
yeah. Whoa, fantastic. Yeah. All right, so where can people find out more about you?
Yeah, I write on pearceonearth.com, P-E-A-R-C-E, onearth.com. It's our personal family travel blog. I write about travel and entrepreneurship, and
you've got some fascinating articles on there. I've been absorbed and lost for a little while on your site. I was interested in some of your spirituality stories, why you left your church, and all this. I thought there was some really interesting stuff on there. I highly recommend people checking it out.
Yeah, thanks. Please do. Yeah. If you feel free to send me an email too. I'm open to communication with anyone if you have questions about anything. Just want to chat. So.
Okay, fantastic. Well, I'll pop. Are you happy for? Well, you can do it two ways. People could either comment on the show notes page, and I could just send you them through when they come through, or we could pop your email down there. Totally up to you.
Okay, sure.
We'll confirm it afterwards if you want.
Okay, sounds good.
Cool. And obviously people interested, actually I should say too, you've got studiohelper.com. So that's for teachers who are running multi-teacher studios. And I just thought I'd put a plug in. My episode 7 of the podcast was how to build a multi-teacher studio with one of my friends from Adelaide who's done that very successfully here. So if anyone is interested in that, episode 7 is the one to listen to, and your software the one to look at if you've got other teachers with you. And look, the best place to grab Music Teachers Helper is using my code. So if you go to timtopham.com/MTH, that'll actually get you 10% off for life through that code, which I've actually shared on a number of sort of podcasts and things. That gets you a free 30-day trial and 10% off forever, which is a pretty good deal. So There we go. Now, Brendan, is there anything that I should have asked you that we've kind of skipped over in regard to this whole idea of kind of inspiring teachers to look outside the studio for income and that sort of thing?
I think we've covered it pretty well. The only thing that I would, you know, reiterate is, I think one of the most necessary skills, if you do plan to create a business or go into you know, some kind of other product, is persistence, dedication, and patience. A lot of people think that, well, I'll create this, you know, app in a month, and then I'll launch it, and in 6 months, I'll be rich. It doesn't work like that for most people. And it's a lot of hard work. So be prepared for it. And, but it is, for me, it's been completely worth all of the efforts to put in. I love hearing back from teachers who are using my product saying things like, you know, this is what I've been looking for my entire teaching career, or, you know, this has saved my business and my love for what I do. And it just, it inspires me, and helps me feel, like what I'm doing is really valuable and providing a useful service in the world. So it's motivating. That kind of motivation is what keeps me going and focusing on that, you know, helps me through the hard times.
Yeah. And I can share a synergy with that and the work that I'm doing on the blog and the podcast. You know, every email that I get or review that I get, that's kind of thankful and supportive. Yeah, it does. It gives you a real boost and makes the hours that you put in worth it. Yeah. So that's great. Well, what a great way to finish. Thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you very much for your time. I'll let you go and enjoy the beach or whatever's happening in New Zealand today.
I'll be on the computer today. Right. Thanks, Tim.
All right. Great to see you. Speak to you soon.
All right. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
If the idea of a piano teacher's community where you get to access the best educational resources, rub shoulders with expert teachers from around the world, and have immediate access to feedback for any of your questions, then Inner Circle membership is for you. The Inner Circle is my private community of piano teachers from across the globe who share a commitment to creating and delivering the most inspiring, modern, and progressive learning experiences for their students. Membership is now open, so head to timtopham.com/community to find out more and get involved today. I can't wait to see you on the inside.